Health Radio.
This is more than we bargained for.
Here's Barbara Alexander.
There isn't a baby boomer in the country today, this country, or probably any other country, that doesn't feel like it's time for some cosmetic surgery. There's not any culture on the face of the planet that doesn't have rising medical costs. In this country, it's almost impossible. And it's especially impossible if you don't have medical insurance. So rather than talk about medical insurance, let's talk about places you can get procedures done for much, much less with a high degree of safety and an organization that makes it possible for you. I'm Barbara Alexander, feeling just ducky on Health Radio. Welcome back. Joining us on the line this morning is the co-founder and managing director of Med Retreat. It's a medical tourist group that has been around for a long time, and my understanding is the best of anyone out there. Patrick Marsick joins us. Welcome.
Hi, how are you doing today, Barbara? Great to be back with you. It's been about 3 years since our last interview.
At least two, yeah. It's been a while. And you have written a book called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Medical Tourism.
That is correct.
In the meantime, and tell me where the organization is at this point.
Well, the organization continues to help people travel abroad safely and affordably to receive, like you mentioned, either cosmetic or dental surgery, as well as other medical procedures such as orthopedics, neurological procedures, cardiac procedures, gynecological procedures. But as it relates to the book, the Penguin Group approached me and wanted to write a comprehensive guide for the average American consumer to be able to read and get some non-biased information. They were very, very stringent on that. In fact, Med Retreat was not mentioned anywhere in the book other than under my bio, and it was written from a very objective point of view to give people information to start doing their due diligence and finding out how to do this properly.
Okay. Well, let's start with explaining medical tourism has been around for a while. I know that. I mean, when I was in high school, people were going to Mexico for dental surgery.
They continue to do that as well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The reason for that was price, right?
Yeah, mainly it was cost-driven. Actually, people have been doing this for hundreds of years throughout the world as a result of poor quality or lack of healthcare facilities in their respective countries. You know, there are many third-world countries around the world that do not have quality medical facilities. So people are traveling from places like Indonesia to either Singapore or Malaysia, situations like that for a long time, many times by foot and boat to be able to get to these places, and several weeks to get to their final destination. So it's been around for a long time. But as it relates to Americans actually doing this, it's probably been a little over a decade where it's becoming popular.
And one of the things most Americans will look at is, well, how safe will I be? How safe will they be?
Right. Well, they'll be very safe if they do their due diligence. It requires a little bit of research, Barbara. You just can't select a country in a hospital without knowing full well what they're all about. And that's the advantage of working with a medical tourism service agency like Med Retreat. There are others as well. We've gone to these destinations. We've inspected the hospitals. We've met with the executive staff.
Yeah, but you're the best. You know you are.
So it's said. But we're not here to toot our own horn. The proof is really in the pudding. So, you know, people really can't understand until they have the opportunity to see for themselves. And that brings up a good point, Barbara. If you're going to work with an agency, make sure they have some kind of a guarantee in place for you, because you're going to need to take a leap of faith to go there and see for yourselves. And if the conditions are not what you expected, you need a way to get back without charge. So that's one of the things that we provide, a money-back guarantee. If you have your doctor's consultation, you tour the hospital facility, you don't feel completely comfortable with what you see and hear, you're free to come back home and your deposit is fully returned. So that's an important fact to know.
Okay. Doesn't international air travel add a great deal to the cost?
You'd be surprised. surprised how airfares have come down over the past few years. Let me give you an example. You could fly to, we're talking economy class, obviously business class and first class are much higher. The average price to travel halfway around the world is about $1,500. So it does add some cost to it, but when you factor in the savings for the actual procedure itself, there's so much room to be able to spend extra money on airfare. You're still going to save up to 80% of what you would pay in the U.S. for your procedure.
Up to 80%?
Up to 80%, depending on where you go and what type of procedure you're having performed.
You're serious?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's talking real money, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
For the people who can't have anything done without using their insurance, how does that work?
Well, and that's the core market here, uninsured Americans or Americans who are underinsured. Every company has a different business model. Ours is, you know, once you contact us, we have a free membership. So you complete our online application form, and then we start walking you through the process. We educate you about medical tourism as well as the services that we offer. And our best customer is an informed customer. We leave no stone unturned. We have a very well-detailed process that people follow so that they can safely and effectively travel abroad to receive their surgery. You shouldn't just do this blindly. There are a lot of things you need to know about the procedure, the way it's performed by the doctor, the doctor's credentials, the hospital's credentials, are they accredited, about the culture, how to plan, how to pack. There are a lot of issues. One small example is that many people don't even think about is that when you're traveling abroad, you're going to be using your credit card. Now, you need to inform your credit card company before you go. Otherwise, they may view the charge as suspicious activity coming from another country of which you've probably never traveled to and deny the claim, deny the charge. Then you're stuck in a foreign country without any money. That's a bad situation. So little things like that we take care of. We help educate people to contact their credit card company, inform them exactly where they're going and what they're going for.
When let's just talk about some basic procedures, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say somebody, I'm leaning towards the elective surgeries because the choice of having insurance cover it and not having it cover it, the elective ones are usually the ones that get left out.
Yeah, yes.
Cosmetic surgeries, that kind of stuff. Okay.
Cosmetic and dental, yeah. Something to remember, excuse me, if you're going to be traveling abroad to have any type of surgery, including cosmetic surgery, you need to make sure that the surgery is being performed in a full-service tertiary care hospital. There are many clinics overseas, especially in Brazil and Costa Rica, who are not connected to a hospital. That could be a very dangerous situation. You want to make sure you have complete medical staff available very quickly in case something should go wrong. Now, we haven't experienced that, but it's very possible that it could happen sometime in the future. You need to make sure you have, a cardiologist close by, a vascular surgeon. You know, the full service of that the hospital offers needs to be quickly available. So when you're at a clinic, it could possibly take, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes to get to a full-service hospital from a clinic. So as a result, we don't actually offer any clinics. All our cosmetic surgery is performed in a hospital, so that safety is definitely addressed.
And who is it accredited by?
There are a couple of different accreditation agencies out there. The most popular seems to be JCI, the Joint Commission International. They're based out of Oak Brook, Illinois. They're U.S.
Of course they are.
their U.S. Marketing arm is called JACO. JACO accredits all hospitals in the U.S., so they're very familiar with quality standards. So Joint Commission is one. There's also the Trent Accreditation Scheme based out of the UK. There are a couple around the world, and they're all relatively similar, but JCI seems to be the most popular.
So the idea that some surgeon who was trained in the backwater of the Amazon jungle by an Indian medicine man working on your face is highly unlikely?
Yeah, it really is. In fact, we have U.S. board certified surgeons that perform our cosmetic surgery. They're members of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. So, and they practice here in the U.S. for several years. Our most popular surgeon practiced in the U.S. for about 25 years and then went back to his home in Malaysia.
Patrick Marsick is my guest. He is the co-founder of Med Retreat and the author of Medical Tourism, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Medical Tourism. The idea is to get the most affordable medical care in the world without sacrificing quality. And did you say your most popular cosmetic surgeon has gone back to his home in Malaysia?
Yes, he has. He was trained at Loma Linda University, practiced in California for about 10 years, then went to Sloan Kettering in Dayton, Ohio, had a private practice there, decided to move back home to spend the rest of his life with his extended family, and he's part of the Adventist group, which is based out of Loma Linda, California. There's a hospital in Malaysia that's associated with them. So there's a lot of American ties when using a surgeon like that. I mean, he understands fully how to operate on Americans and what their expectations are.
Okay. The question I would pose at this point is, why would the cost continue to stay down when it's becoming a more popular event?
Well, there are many reasons why the costs are less expensive overseas. You know, I would imagine as this gains popularity, perhaps the costs will rise. They haven't to date because there's not as much business going overseas as has been reported in the press. I mean, there have been reports of millions of people leaving the U.S. I don't believe that's absolutely true.
No, that's not happening.
No, that's more hype than anything. So realistically, the numbers are much less than that. But, you know, the cost of labor is less overseas. The cost to build facilities is less. They get their equipment at a cheaper cost. The labor rates are less expensive, so, you know, nurses and surgeons don't make as much as they make here. Medical malpractice insurance is probably one-tenth of what it is here in the U.S. So there's many...
Yeah, that really is what drives a lot of doctors out of business.
It's really
the malpractice insurance and the insurance companies dictating to them.
Yes. You know, we have... one of my neighbors is actually a doctor. He's an OB-GYN in Illinois here, and he just moved his practice into Wisconsin because the rates are much less expensive than they are in Illinois. So that's happening all over. It's becoming a major problem. And perhaps the advent of medical tourism, as it becomes even more popular, maybe that'll encourage the U.S. healthcare system to take a look at their costs and find ways to reduce the cost to try to keep more people here or insure more people here in the U.S.
Now, it's called medical tourism for a reason. What you can not only go over there and have the procedure performed, but you can also look around the country and be a tourist.
You know, that is true, but the term medical tourism was coined by the press about 7 to 8 years ago. We prefer to actually call it medical travel, although most people know it by medical tourism. Here's the fact of the matter, Barbara. The most important thing to you should be going somewhere to receive a high-quality procedure and recuperating to a level to where it's safe to travel back home. But on the back end or on the front end, if you do have some extra time and are up to it and have doctor's permission, you could certainly tour the country and see some of the interesting sites that the country has to offer. But don't choose your country based on that. You really need to choose your destination based on the quality of hospital and doctor. So that's
for whatever it is you want to have done.
Right, for whatever it is you want to have done. As well, there are certain countries that are much more conducive to medical tourism. Obviously, English-speaking countries are probably the better because you don't
have the language barrier.
There's no language barrier, right. So, and that can be very detrimental when you're talking about medical procedures. You need to know exactly what the doctor's talking about and not leave anything to misinterpretation.
Well, if you are going for a cosmetic procedure, it helps if their favorite artist is not Picasso.
yeah, exactly. I've seen some of his paintings. Yeah, but you know, it is an art. It absolutely is an art. And also, when you're choosing a cosmetic surgeon, you want to probably look for someone who is very conservative, because you've probably seen some of the movie stars with some of the procedures they've had done over.
Well, we have the Joan Rivers Michael Jackson look-alike contest.
congratulations to Joan Rivers for just winning Donald Trump's contest, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do you find that there's any resentment of the traveler, of the patient, by the medical staff that isn't getting paid nearly as much? I mean, is there any of that stuff going on?
Why, I've never heard that question before. That's very interesting. I have not heard personally of any resentment. In fact, I think our facilities really embrace the fact of having Americans come. One of the reasons is, you know, American patients are very persnickety. And if you can take care of American patient with high rate of satisfaction, you could pretty much take care of anybody. So they pride themselves on quality of service. And as a result of working with American patients, they're touted to be an international hospital as a result. So they look forward to doing that. And it's much more interesting for them, too. I mean, some of the countries we go to, they love America. You know, it's not something...
Sure.
Yeah. So, and they want to be like America. So they're also learning. They're learning how to treat international patients at the same time as providing with the care.
Let me ask you about some of these countries and their specialities. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you have facilities in Argentina, Brazil, Costa Rica, El Salvador, India, Malaysia, Mexico, South Africa, Thailand, and Turkey. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to have a procedure done, what is Turkey good for?
Well, here's the fact of the matter. Certain people prefer certain destinations. If you're Muslim, you may really, really enjoy Turkey because it's a Muslim country. However, it's not for everyone. But I will say, out of all the destinations you just mentioned, every one of them has great hospital facilities, JCI-accredited, full-service tertiary care. Now, here's the simple rule of thumb. It seems like the closer you are to the U.S., the higher the cost. The further away, such as Southeast Asia, the lower the cost. It's just some type of global economics that fits in there. And but some people prefer to travel closer. They'd rather spend a little bit more on the procedure and stay closer. And others are really looking for the cost savings, and they think that you know, spending a day traveling is worth the amount of savings. So, but Turkey has some great hospitals. They've got Acibadem, which is JCI accredited. They've got probably, I think, like six hospitals now in Istanbul. And as you probably know, Istanbul is probably one of the only cities that I know of that is in two different continents.
Yeah, it's a fabulous place. I love it,
yeah.
Istanbul.
Yeah.
Okay, what about South Africa?
South Africa is not very popular. We've offered that from the very beginning, but the costs are quite a bit higher than in other places. So although we do offer it, we have affiliations there, it's not a very popular destination. It's... the costs are probably 30% higher than you can get in other parts of the world.
Really?
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah. We may be dropping them.
Why is that?
Our service. You know, I really don't know. It's just it's economics. I mean, it's just, I guess it costs more for things there. So as a result, they have to charge more.
Okay. Brazil?
Brazil has been known for cosmetic surgery to the stars for, you know, 20 or 30 years now. However, we offer full service care there, but not cosmetic, because most of the cosmetic surgeons work out of their own clinics. We don't feel that's a safe proposition for Americans.
Because?
Because the clinics are not attached to hospitals. If something should go wrong during surgery...
Aren't the physicians affiliated? I mean, they must send their patients someplace.
Sure, they're affiliated with hospitals, but they do the procedures in their clinics in most cases.
Okay.
Yeah.
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica has been very popular in dental care as well as cosmetic surgery. Again, cosmetic surgery in Costa Rica is mainly done out of clinics, so that is not something we offer. But the dental care... is offered in clinics, which does not pose a problem. You know, dentistry is much safer than cosmetic surgery. So they've got some great sites too. It's a very nice place. English.
Well,
is
if you're going someplace
well-known
for dental surgery and it's been completed, there's no reason for you. There's no health risk for you to then become a tourist for a while.
Exactly. Yes. So dental tourism is much more conducive to you know, seeing sights and doing things. Because in many times, let's take an example. Let's say you're going for, let's say crowns. Your first appointment, what they're going to go and do is they're going to go in and prepare to accept the crown, and then you're going to wait a few days while the crowns are being manufactured,
made,
so
right.
You've got spare time.
Exactly. Patrick Marsick is my guest. He is the co-founder of Medical Tourism and the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Medical Tourism, Getting the Most Affordable Medical Care in the World Without Sacrificing the Quality. And that is truly what the goal is these days, right?
Yes, that is true. Safety is always the most important thing to consider.
What about patients from the socialized medicine countries? Do they also seek out this kind of travel?
Yes, they do for different reasons, though. Well, actually,
yeah, they can't get in to see their own doctors.
The thing about, let's say, for example, Canadian healthcare is that, you know, everybody's covered under the socialized medicine program. However, there are long waiting lists for certain procedures. And, you know, Barbara, when you're living in pain, each day seems like a month. So people do actually pay out of their pocket to travel abroad to receive the same surgeries they would for free in their home country, in many, many times, you know, months, potentially even a year sooner, though. So, yeah, their motivation is a little bit different. Their motivation is to have quick access to care as opposed to affordable access to care. But, you know, they also have the option of coming to the U.S., but, you know, they're going to pay, you know, 4 to 5 times more. So I think medical tourism has become quite popular with Canadians just north of the border.
What kind of a place is Malaysia for this type of travel?
Malaysia is probably our most popular destination. There's a lot of value going to Malaysia. Malaysia was colonized by Great Britain. In fact, just gained their independence in 1958. So, you know, they're an English-speaking country. They're very, very warm and hospitable. Very diverse cultures of people there, and they're always willing to please. So we offer service to Kuala Lumpur, which is more of a big city type of environment, but we also offer service to Penang, Malaysia, which is a small turtle-shaped island off the northwest coast of Malaysia. Very, very safe, very easy to navigate, and just a very popular destination for us because the value in traveling there is probably the greatest. Maybe the cost isn't the least expensive. India would probably be the least expensive. But as far as infrastructure and feeling safe and secure and being pleased with the environment, Malaysia is a step above that.
What do you do with people in recovery? I mean, what choices are there in terms of recovery?
Well, it depends on what we do is we've established a timeline based on each specific procedure as to how long you must remain in the hospital, as well how long you must remain in the destination country. So your first part of your stay, you're going to be in the hospital, you have your surgery. Depending on the complexity of the surgery, you may spend one night in the ICU and then go to your own private room. And by the way, private rooms overseas are about $150 a night, so there's no hurry to leave the hospital. You're going to receive your physical therapy. Your doctors are going to continually visit you and make sure you're well on your way to recovery. Once you're released from the hospital, you're going to go to a 4 to 5 star hotel, depending on your budget. A 4 to 5 star hotel is about $100 overseas, except India. India is much more expensive. You'll pay, you know, $200 to $300. That's the only downfall of cost in India. But other places, for between $100 and $125, you get a very nice suite, many times on the executive level, including breakfast and evening hors d'oeuvres and cocktails if you can have drinks. So and a lot of amenities. So there's your recuperation once you're released from the hospital is very much service-oriented in some great hotels that we have to offer. We've been to all the hotels that we offer as part of our process. We need to inspect them, and, you know, we've developed corporate pricing with them, so if someone were to try to go there on their own, it may cost them twice as much as when they go through MedRetreat.
Mm-hmm. And Thailand?
Thailand's a very, very busy city, but they have some great hospitals.
Is it Bangkok?
If you like culture, it could potentially take you to travel 2 miles. It could take you over half an hour in the traffic in Thailand. Mm-hmm. But many people like Thailand for their culture. They're very, very hospitable people. They got some great hospitals there as well. You've probably heard of Bumrungrad International. That was one of the first to be featured on, I think it was 60 Minutes, probably about 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a hotel in itself. But there are others besides Bumrungrad. You know, there's Pia Wait and there's Pia Thai. There's several hospitals that have met JCI accreditation standards and it's a popular place. The only thing with Thailand is recently they've had some civil unrest. They've had some demonstrations. They had to close the Sawanapumi Airport for a few days one time. They're going back and forth between who their leader should be. Should it be, you know, should it be Thaksin, who was their prime minister for many years, or should it be someone else? So they're back and forth. But overall, it's a very safe community. You just have
so it's an internal squabble. It doesn't have anything to do with people coming in.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not like they're going out and killing Americans. Not at all.
Right. If a member of your family were going to have a serious surgery, mm-hmm. where would you send them if it were just medical, not cosmetic, but just medical?
Well, because I'm sure they would stay in the U.S. But if I was not insured, or if it was a pre-existing condition, I would probably send them to Malaysia. It's just a great experience. We have hundreds and hundreds of patients that have been there and talk very highly of it. In fact, that's one of the reasons why it's become so popular. You know, when people ask for references based on their procedure and we hand them over, many people like what they have to hear about Malaysia. So I would probably recommend Malaysia to my family.
Are they, where are the doctors trained?
Some are trained in the U.S. Some are trained in the U.K., some are trained in Australia, and some are trained in their own country. Malaysia has some very, very strict standards for doctors. They have a great association that you know has developed a process by which these doctors must follow and pass. In fact, Malaysia is one of the few countries that cannot advertise their medical care. So they're very conservative. You won't hear much about Malaysia through the press because they're just not allowed to do it.
Okay, so how do you check on a doctor's credential, or do we depend on you to do that?
Well, everybody depends on the hospitals to do that. Really, you know, you can read a doctor's credentials, and they could be the best credentials in the world, but you really need to know what their outcomes data is, and the hospitals have all that. So, what we've done is when we've traveled abroad and met with the hospital administrators, we've asked them to select their very best surgeons. To work on our patients' cases. However, if you go to try to do this yourself, you may not get the same courtesy. But because they know that they must continue to provide high-quality care and have good outcomes to keep our business, they have to provide the very best surgeons available. So they make the decision as to which surgeons to offer, and then ultimately it's up to you to choose. But they're going to provide some options for you. You can check their credentials, but what it really comes down to, Barbara, is relationships. The hospital's relationship with the doctor, they're going to force them to do everything possible to make a patient whole, even if there is a problem, which we really don't experience. But if there were a problem, they would do everything in their power to make them whole and make them right. Mm-hmm. So you can't always guarantee that if you're going to work with a hospital by yourself. You just don't have the negotiating power. So you know, and as well, you know, a great surgeon can have a bad day. You just don't know.
Yeah, I know.
their mind might be somewhere else. So, I mean, you're really taking a leap of faith. But that's the same.
But you're doing that in this country. You know, the greatest surgeon on earth can have a bad day.
Exactly.
And if you're the person under the knife, you're there.
Right. There's no guarantees. I mean, there are potential risks in every surgery, no matter where you go, including the U.S.
Do any American insurance companies pay for these procedures?
Currently, they're looking into doing this. I know Blue Cross Blue Shield South
Carolina. Patrick, that's what you said last time.
Yes, they're still looking. So there's certain issues that need to be dealt with. You know, being an American company, obviously the most important thing to most businesses is liability. Okay, how would they be liable if they sent someone overseas? So they're waiting for policies to be written, to be offered, to protect them from litigation. Another issue is continuity of care. You know, they want to make sure they have the network set up in the U.S. When people return. So a couple of issues are still being dealt with.
Okay. Patrick Marksek is with me. We're talking about medical tourism. And the predominant thing that will force you overseas or suggest to you that going overseas is a good idea is the cost. On the other hand, to me, it's also the service that you get. And as I think about this program, it's how you're taken care of. And folks, if you've been to a hospital recently or you've been to a medical clinic, one of the things you should have noticed is that they're eager to get you out the door just as quickly as possible. So the continued care that's practiced by any physician or his staff, her staff, should be important to you. And that would be my next question, Patrick, is what is the continued care program?
You really have to experience it to know. The continued care is phenomenal overseas. You know, you have to remember in the U.S., a lot of the costs are room charge. You know, you could pay up, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for a private room, depending on which hospital you're in. When you're overseas, it's only $150 a day. They are not interested in kicking you out of the hospital. They want to make sure that you're well on your way to recovery, provides you with the best possible service so that when you come back home, you're going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell your friends about this hospital, about the doctors, and it's going to continue to grow their business. So the quality of care, you know, as you're probably aware, many other countries have great hospitality.
Yes.
You know, the Latinos, the Asians are very much into satisfying people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, in the U.S. we're so busy, our hospitals are so busy, and because they're limited amount of time, it's almost like you're a number, you're being shuffled in and out. Now, I'm not saying there aren't great hospitals in the U.S. I mean, everybody tries to model the U.S. as far as quality of care. But after the procedure is just as important as before the procedure, and you want to make sure you're being taken care of. But I will tell you that we do receive complaints with the quality of aftercare overseas, and the complaint normally is they pay too much attention to us. You know, I really like to rest and relax. They're in every hour or two, checking my blood pressure, making sure I'm okay. I just want to sleep. So there's such a thing as going overboard. But you just tell them that, you know, look, I'd like to have 4 hours sleep. You know, please don't bother me. And then they're fine with that.
Mm-hmm. But they're not forgetting about you either.
No, not at all. You know, the nurse-to-patient ratio is much greater overseas than it is here in the U.S. What's here in the U.S., one nurse to every 7 to 10 patients, mm-hmm. on average. Mm-hmm. Overseas, it's 1 to 2, 1 to 3. In ICU, it's 1 to 1. So each nurse, if they only have to pay attention to 2 to 3 patients at a time, they can visit you a lot more often.
Mm-hmm. I noticed in your book that affiliations with U.S. hospitals is listed here. It's in your search for an overseas medical facilities, look for institutions boast affiliations with renowned U.S. medical centers. And we have things like Harvard Medical International, the John Hopkins Hospital, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Baylor University Medical Center, New York Presbyterian Hospital, and Weill Cornell Medical College. And they are affiliated with these hospitals?
Yeah, it's going to be called global healthcare very soon. You know, these institutions in the U.S. see They see what's happening, and they see the need to be affiliated with hospitals globally now. So one of the benefits of an overseas hospital having an affiliation with the U.S. hospital is they receive cross-training, they share technology, equipment information. So it actually works out great for the international patient because a lot of information is shared back and forth. So, and you'll start seeing some hospitals in the U.S. opening branches in other countries as well. Right now they just have pretty much affiliations or small interest in these other hospitals. But you're going to start seeing more of that where they're looking to provide the same quality of care at more affordable prices.
And they know they can't do it here because of the price of labor.
It's really a shame because, you know, you feel for the doctors and you feel for the hospitals. You know, as you know, in a hospital in the U.S., if someone visits the emergency room, even if they don't have a dime to their name, they can't be refused service. So, I mean, there's a lot of emergency room bad debt. That's also part of the reason why costs are higher. As well, you know, the U.S. Does a lot of research and development. So some of those hospital fees go towards the research and development. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why the costs are higher here in the U.S. And perhaps this will start being looked at and maybe finding ways to reduce the cost in the U.S. so that more patients can stay home instead of traveling abroad.
Well, and I don't know that there's anything... I can't see the downside to traveling, but then I'm a traveler.
Oh, there is a downside. There are certain risks you must be aware of. There are certain things called, like, deep vein thrombosis when you're traveling in an airplane. We've never had a case of that, but it could potentially happen. When you're sitting in one place for a very long time, you could develop a blood clot, and it could potentially travel up to your heart or your brain. So, I mean, but there are things that we educate people to do before they fly, if the procedures they're going for are conducive to deep vein thrombosis. There's medications you can take previous to flying, and there's exercises that you can do while on the plane to help prevent that as well. There's jet lag issues. You know, I experience it all the time in my travels. It seems like, on the average, for every hour of time zone difference, it takes a day to recuperate from jet lag. So if you're traveling to Southeast Asia, which is 12 hours away, it's going to take you 12 hours to completely recuperate from that jet lag. Your biological time clock is going to be off a little bit, and you're going to want to sleep when it's light out, but then you can't because it's light out. You're going to want to stay up when it's dark out. But that all, you know, that all takes care of itself. There's really no secret to fighting jet lag and overcoming jet lag, but it's just something you need to be aware of. So, yeah, so traveling long distance, there are risks. You know, there's always a risk of an airplane accident. However, I think airplane accidents happen less often than car accidents. So,
Well, speaking as a pilot, there's one accident for every 43,000 pilot hours.
Is that right? Okay.
And there's one accident for every 20 driving hours.
Okay.
And if you look in the sky, how many airplanes do you see? And if you look on the street, how many cars do you see? It's a no-brainer.
Right. You know, it's almost a matter of fate too, you know, or luck or bad luck, you know, if something like that happens. But you know, what it really comes down to, Barbara, is people need an option to health care here in the U.S. If you're living in pain, if you can't afford to have surgery in the U.S., then perhaps you should look into this. Now, I will also say that not everybody is cut out to become a medical traveler. But that's what part of our job. We help them identify if this is right for them. There are certain psychological issues you need to be aware of. You know, if you have fear, if you have anxiety, if you become angry very quickly, you really need to have an open mind when traveling abroad because not everything goes as planned. It could be as simple as a flight schedule was changed, so you're sitting in the airport for an extra hour, or what if you miss a flight? Another reason why you should work with a medical travel company will help bridge that gap.
Yeah, I was about to ask you what medical travel agencies there are.
What was the question?
Are there medical travel agencies?
Well, that's what we're considered to be, a medical travel agency.
Okay.
Medical travel, medical tourism, yeah. What we do is we hold your hand from the very beginning and long past when you return home. We stay in contact with our clients minimum of a year after they return home.
Really?
Make sure there are no issues. Yeah, absolutely. For life, if they wish.
Now,
sure.
What if, right, what if, I've just lost the question.
Well, then I lost the answer.
There you go.
Can I just make up an answer?
What if you don't heal as quickly as the timetable dictates? In other words, you should be ready to go home after a week. What if it takes two?
Well, then we'll make all the arrangements to extend your trip for you while you're resting.
And it's not a problem.
You don't have to panic. It's not a problem for us, no. Now, the only thing is there could potentially be, you know, a small charge from the airlines. Normally it's about $75 to make the change.
Make the change.
Small price to pay.
Right. Thank you for bringing this to us. And I hope many people take advantage of it, because I think that's what's needed around the globe.